Yes, I'm getting good audio. All right, we have reached our final kind of election. Though we're going to meet one more time. Next week, we're going to talk about a hybrid of all three elections put together. And it will be a fascinating story. At least it's been a fascinating story to me. So tonight, we're going to talk about artificial elections. Artificial elections are for matters in which we can express the highest degree of freedom. We're talking about creative things now. If you want a definition or a statement that is repeatable, an artificial election is performed when one is doing something which transcends nature and human limitations, still working within both. An artificial election is performed when one is endeavoring to do something which transcends nature and human limitations while still working with both. Obviously, for now, as long as we are in a body and we don't completely rule all the laws of nature, we always have to consider nature. We're in it, and we can't not be in it and be alive at any rate. And it's also very difficult to do something that goes beyond our capacities. So sometimes, because we all have limitations, we have to take those limitations into account. Duke Ellington used to say that that was a large part of his music composition. He composed according to the strengths and the weaknesses of the people that he orchestra. But gradually, little bit by little bit, we do expand our capacities, and we do get better, and we improve in all things. However, despite all of these considerations, there are things that we do where the idea of what we are doing is more important than the stuff that we're working with, or with our capacity to work with it. That is what we do when we do an artificial election. The stuff will be what it will be, and we can bend our talents to the dream, but when the dream is all important beyond the talents and everything else, that is important. Now, in an artificial election, one or a group of people conceive clearly and precisely what they want to do and how to do it. And then you find a time in the ephemeral passage of the stars so that it's harmonious so that it can be done. So it's when one or a group of people conceive very clearly what they want to do and how to do it, and then they find a time that's harmonious with the do it. Let's look at some examples. If you found a society, like a garden club or something like that, or a society for eggheads with interests in electronics or something like that, you would do that under an artificial election. Or if you elected to form an organization to thwart prejudice against Native Americans in high schools, be a very clear-cut idea that you had, and it would then be a matter of finding a time to work that out. Or suppose you wanted to write a novel about drifters and downtrodden people who displace their depression with diversion. Now that's a fairly clear-cut idea, and you can see how you can astrologically conceive that idea and find a time that you can work that out. They're all very creative activities, and the idea is much more important than the talent or what the nature of the subject is. Now, there is an important set of corollaries involved in this kind of activity. One is that you have to know what you want before you can. Very often what happens is people treat an artificial election like a fishing trip and or like a shopping trip. Let's go window shopping and pick out all kinds of goodies. You can do that sort of thing, but it usually isn't successful. And you have to be certain that you want the thing in question, because you're going to get what you want. That's always the thing. If you want something and you clearly understand what you want, make sure that you know that you want it, because you're going to get it. Often what happens is a lot of people don't really clearly know exactly what they want. And they expect the astrologer to tell them what they want, and they expect the astrologer to give them, saying, do this. And there's a great temptation in that. The temptation is for the astrologer to want to be an authoritative person and do exactly what the people ask them to do. That's a very bad thing to do. It actually decreases freedom for both the astrologer and for the people involved. The people become more dependent, and then the astrologer has some responsibility for what the people are doing. And when you're working with this kind of election, you're looking for freedom, and you're not trying to put yourself in less freedom. If the people don't know what they want, then it's the duty of the astrologer to help them to discover what it is they really want. And some people don't have the vaguest idea of what they want, and even with a lot of probing, they're not going to let you know what they want, because they really don't have anything in mind. It's like pulling teeth, but sometimes it's successful. In fact, I used to do a lot of that with people who were changing careers, and I've lost several sets, but there are two very thick books published by the Government Printing Office. One is a list of all of the current professions in the United States, and not only professions, but and then there's another one that I forget what it is, but if you go to the Government Printing Office website, and there are two big thick books, and I used to give the book to the people and say, all right, you figure out what things you want in here, and then we'll look at your horoscope and see whether it works out or not. And what happened is that the people realized that they didn't know what they wanted, and they had so much ambivalence and negativity, it just went south with the books, and that was it. The notions that some people have are pretty much removed from the reality of things, so that if they do proceed forward, they would soon meet with disasters. So you do have to help them to some extent understand whether what they want to do for them is fitting or not. Sometimes it's necessary to ground people. And being grounded and not having wild ideas or floating off without responsibility is an important thing. I look at doing astrological work as much as doing psychological counseling and sociological counseling and other things, because a lot of people don't think about life, and if they go to regular counselors, they are bothered by the official structure of it, whereas something informal in astrology could do a lot of good for people. However, in some cases, serious matters are very much involved, and whether it is, if it's something that is going to have catastrophic consequences, let people learn a lesson. You have to give them some warning about themselves. Now, the people who do seek artificial elections are often dreamers, and they're of such a temperament that they're easily discouraged and easy or an early defeat in the process will often stymie them, or they just won't go forward. Now, enter into people's lives, we do have responsibilities. And those responsibilities are more than just technical astrological responsibilities. Sometimes, and I find it usually the case, the non-astrological factors are more important than the astrological factors. All right, we're halfway done already. It should be short tonight. Now, the artificial election that we're going to do is an election for setting the date and time of a wedding. Now, some people would consider this outrageous that we would use an artificial election for this purpose. There are many astrologers, probably most in the world, that would treat a wedding as a natural election. They would think that there are naturally good days for getting married and that everyone should get married on those days. And in some parts of the world, this actually happens. A famous astrologer says this is a good day for a wedding, and sometimes hundreds and sometimes even thousands of couples all get wed on that day. I suppose that's all right if people are like uniform breed stock. That might be an okay thing. And if you have a society that is pretty much unchanging, and through the tradition of astrology, the unchanging society, which doesn't have a lot of high individuation, that might work, and it might work very well. I've had people come to me and say, my guru said, tell us what day to get married. Start taking them into what they, asking them what they wanted, and they didn't go, they were not at all cooperative. They wanted me to make the decision. And I said, I can't do things that way, because I think that we are much more creative than that. And different people have different ends to a marriage, and therefore in this society we have to treat a marriage differently. Now, some people would try to treat marriage as a performance election. The performance election like we did last time. I used to think that way. If a marriage were a matter of playing down the faults and stressing the good points of the individuals, if that was all there was to it, that might be all right. But marriage is much more than that, because couples do have dreams. Dreams of what they would like in their marriage, and it is not just a matter of tolerating and minimalizing or stressing things. And if you would like to treat a marriage as a natal election or a performance election, it is really hard to find a day that is fair to both people, because what it one person might benefit greatly from it, but another would not benefit at all. And it's hard to do that. What we're going to try and do is also difficult. Now, I believe that even before you begin the process of electing, it is important to do premarital counseling. And that's what we're really doing right now is you're going to see. It's more premarital counseling than it is anything else. You have to figure out what they want and what is realistic. But if people are coming to you and say, we're wanting to get married, that's not the time to consider compatibilities or destiny ties or things like that. And sometimes when people are in a marriage and it's not working well and they're fighting with each other, that's when they come and say, would you look at the compatibilities in the chart? I said, no, because now is not the time to look at compatibilities. You should have done that before you thought about getting married. Because if there is not compatibilities now, and I tell you that, you're just going to use that as a reason for divorce. I'm not going to do that. And I've had that happen a lot of times. People want to know, are we compatible with each other after they're already married, sometimes even with children? It's so that what we're doing is premarital counseling. Now, we have what we're saying here is that the participants have dreams of what they want in a marriage. Sometimes those are unrealistic. But we're entitled to have a dream whether it's unrealistic or not. And it's important that both people entering into the marriage know what the other wants. Not only what they want, but what the other wants. And the sooner that they both know what each other wants, the more likely the marriage is to succeed. So this is premarital counseling as it should be. Now, in this process, the couple participates jointly. And what they want, they express to the astrologer, and the astrologer helps them to find a time that is most like what they want, something that facilitates their wishes. They make clear what they want and what they don't want, and the astrologer only finds the time that they can get what they want. It is, in my book, I think it's a fairly serious thing to make decisions for the couple. They have to make their own decision. All right. Now, it's extremely important that both partners participate in these preparations. If it doesn't, then the whole marriage is designed from one person, and it's not really a partnership. I remember one case that I was working with a couple on these things and going through a bunch of questions, as you're going to see in just a minute. And the man was answering all the questions. And I noticed this, and so I started addressing the questions to the woman. And the man started glowering at her, and he gave her intimidating looks and postures and everything else. And I persisted in asking her, and I even cut him off when he tried to answer. And eventually, she came forth with her own views, which he didn't like in the least. And so a dispute arose, and the marriage plans went down the toilet, and I felt I had done a good day's work on that day. Because, you know, people will, you know, there's no marriage when something like that's happening. Now, it's also important to repeat what I'm going to repeat again, that the people know that they're going to get what they ask for. I did this once for a couple who were deeply involved in all kinds of financial endeavors. And they wanted a lot of shared finances to be at the heart of their marriage. And they each had individual projects going on, financial projects, and there were joint projects. And they got what they asked for. They said, well, what's the time that we can get this? After a while, they fought over joint finances and other things, and a divorce ensued, and it turned out to be one of the most complicated divorces in modern county history, over who got what and how much of that, and again, I figured I had to it's work. I don't mean to be a cynic about marriage, but you know, you learn these lessons, and you tell people, you know, that you're going to get what you want. Are you sure you want it? And people are so sure that they want it, and when they get it, they're not so happy. It's also worth mentioning that just because the couple gets what they ask for, doesn't mean that the marriage will have longevity, or that it will otherwise succeed. And it isn't necessary that a marriage do have longevity. Success is that people learn years, if they learn what they need to have learned, they'll be fine. All right. This is what we're talking about with free will beyond astrology. Now, one more thing that I have to mention is that in my own marriage, I did not follow this procedure. Even though the procedure had been well developed, and it was a situation said, you just choose a day. And absolutely would not participate in this. And it was something I learned about her character much later on. She didn't want to participate in this kind of thing at all. We were breaking up. She asked for counseling, but she never wanted to participate in the counseling. And if I had understood those things, it's one of my deeper regrets that I insist on. This is a lengthy process. The way we're going to do it tonight will be very short. We'll be done in a half an hour. But the whole process is lengthy because there's a lot of work for the astrologer. And I mentioned this before. The last time I offered this talk, I offered it to the Astrological Society of Minneapolis. And I asked them what they thought of it. They said, oh, it was all very fine, but they didn't want to do that. So there's a lot of work, and it requires a number of times of meeting with the couples. And you have to have a couple that really believes in this. The first thing that you want are three things. The first thing that you want is a range of time and a list of exclusions. We know that from last week. A range of time is from the earliest possible date to the latest possible date for the wedding. The exclusions are dates that are not allowable, sometimes holidays or sometimes Tuesdays or something like that. And it's important that if you're doing this, that you explain to the couple that the larger range and the fewer the exclusions, the more likely they are going to be that they will get exactly what they want. So it's a range of time with a list of exclusions. The second thing is answers to a list of culling questions. And the culling questions are more for the astrologer than they are for the couple. Culling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G. And, all right, I think it's about time to pass these out. Let's go through them one by one. The first one is, do you want an active achieving marriage, or would you prefer a more contemplative marriage or a refuge marriage or something like that? And is this an important issue to you? What you're trying to determine with asking this question is whether they want to be married under a waxing or under a waning moon. If they want an achieving marriage, then it would be under a waxing moon. contemplative marriage, where they would just, just do a lot of sharing and not necessarily trying to build a financial empire or something like that, you would take a winning move. The second calling question is, do you want to use the strength of your union to challenge difficulties, make changes, and develop? Or do you want the marriage to be a refuge from difficulties? And is this an important issue to you? And what you try to do with this, you discuss this with the couple, and you try to determine the ratio of benefic to malefic aspects. I've actually had couples that have chosen to take on a lot of malefic aspects and had a successful marriage in doing so. So that these are pretty obvious, but you can see how it helps you, because you're going to have to search through the ephemeris, and boy, let me tell you, it is many, many times you're going to have to go through that whole range. The third question is, do you want a marriage with pronounced issues, events, and attitudes, or would you like a more even featured marriage? What you're looking for here is whether they want a marriage with a lot of small orb aspects. Because if there are small orb aspects, then the things are going to be stand out either for better or for worse. So that is, do you want higher or low intensity aspects? And the last question is, would you like to have events come in clusters or bunches, or would you like to have them spread out over time? And is this an issue that's important? What you're trying to do here is you're trying to see whether there are large integrated patterns. If there are large integrated patterns in the time of the wedding, there's going to be a whole bunch of things that come all at one time, and then there will be long intervals between them. But if things are splayed all over the heavens, then that's not so likely to happen. Number four is the lowest priority. It's helpful as if you're deciding between other things. All right. The third thing that you want is a prioritized list of attitudes of the things that the couple wants and does not want in a marriage. Now, this is something that has evolved for me over years of practice. It first began with four lists. Four desired objectives: positive attitudes which must be in the marriage, the positive attitudes which we know about but which are not important to us, the negative attitudes which should by no means be in the marriage, and the negative attitudes with which we are willing to work. The first one to go, that was number two, positive attitudes which we know about but which are not important to us. If you combine number one and number two, it's like saying we want a marriage with a lot of kindness, but optimism is not so important. If you combine three and four, it's like saying, I just gave them to the Orley. They're not, yeah, I'll repeat them. Number one is positive attitudes that must be in a marriage. Number two are positive attitudes which you know about but are not important. Number three are negative attitudes which should by no means be in the marriage. And the number four is negative attitudes with which you are willing to work. That's like saying, combining three and four is like saying, well, we're willing to deal with temper, but we can't deal with sullenness. Or maybe we're willing to deal with sullenness, but not with lies. So what you're trying to find out, what people are willing to work on and what's not. Now, what happens is that most people haven't thought about their lives. And they haven't thought about what their attitudes are. And they don't even know what the range of emotions is that they go through in a day. So, they don't think in terms of these things. And so what happens is that the lists are so scanty that they offer you that they're not worth anything at all. Then you have to pull it out of the people again. And as you know, when you get lists of allowable and disallowable and desirable and not so desirable, it takes a lot of work. When you have those lists, then you have to planetize them, and you have to sinize them. You have to take each of those attitudes. Obviously, temper would be something like Aries or Mars or something like that, and lying would probably be something like Gemini or something like that. And if you don't, you know, it took a lot of time to get this out of people, and it turned out to be a very unsatisfactory process. So in the history of things, number two, the things that are positive but we don't care about was the first thing to go. Now I use only two lists, and those are the two lists that are in your handout. And the way it goes is that the couple discusses them and prioritizes them. They get explained, and the range is explained to the couple. The culling questions are explained, and then the prioritized lists, the attitude lists. Now, if you look at these attitude lists, they are sort of like mirror image of each other. You can see what we're trying to get at. Attitude list number one is all of the positives. What is most important to the couple in the positive, and what is the least important? Now, when you're doing this, these are just simply what these are lists of keywords for each of the 12 signs and the planets that rule them. And so with the attitude list number one, you're looking at some of the things that are positive with each of the 12 signs and the rulers. Now, I should mention that I put them in a very strange order. And they're in a strange order because otherwise people who know little about astrology think more than they know more than they do, and they play it as an astrological game. The first list, attitude list number one, is every fifth sign beginning with Leo. And attitude list number two is every seventh sign beginning with Leo. So it's de-astrologized as much as possible. Now the reason these things have to be discussed is because of a very fundamental problem of astrology. It's an insoluble astrological question. One never knows which facets of a sign or of a house are going to be manifest. You look at some horoscopes and the fifth house represents children. You look at other horoscopes, it represents speculation. You look at other horoscopes, it means play. And sometimes it means several, but not the others. And there is no astrological way that you can tell which are going to be manifest from any sign or from any house. And so if you make these groups or clusters, then the people can get a feel for which of the groups or clusters are something they want and which they don't want. Now when you do this, it's all right for the couple to put notes in the margin and say, we not only want challenge, enthusiasm, and constructiveness, we want that way above everything else. If they want to put it in, that would not only be number one, that would be number one plus plus. It's all right for couples to do that. That's what this is all about. It's communicating and making choices. same thing is done in inverse in attitude list number two. Prioritize from the things that are most undesirable. The least undesirable to the most undesirable. And so you can see you have a fairly good picture. Now when you give the couple this and you make sure they understand it, and then you send them off. And they work together. And when they come back, you check that they had worked together on this. You know, that's part of the communication process. And then what you have to do is you have to planetize this, or you have to astrologize both lists. And when you astrologize both lists, you make your own list. And in that list, like for example, Mars Aries could be +3, something they really wanted, but negative Mars Aries could be -7. So they would want the positive Martial energy, but not the negative Martial energy. So this gives you, having the two lists and planetizing them and prioritizing them, gives you an understanding of what they're looking for. This is not exact science. We're talking rough estimation. Most of life is rough estimation, except if you're playing music or doing something like that. Something has to be exact. So you understand what this is. And then what happens is, in stage two, the astrologer takes the lists and astrologizes them. And then astrologer sits down with the four calling questions and the planetized list that is made up of the two lists that went to the people, and then the arduous task begins. And you go through the ephemeris for the range, and you go through it again and again and again. I have sometimes gone through a range as much as 6 or 7 times, sometimes even more than that. And what you're doing is looking for a day that has the characteristics that are most like what the couple is looking for. And usually, it's impossible, but sometimes it does happen that there's only one day in the whole range of time that is what they want. Usually, it boils down to have selected those 2 or 3 days, and you checked out that they are what that they correspond to the two lists, then you call the couple back in and you tell them what these 3 days are like. Meaning to say, they're like what you want in this way, but they don't quite exactly mix this way. But you get this added feature this way. And you explain each of the days, and you let the couple go, and they talk it over, and then they choose to have the day of marriage. You haven't done anything. You haven't led them into taking this day. You haven't made any authoritative decision. The only place that you can mess things up is if you don't understand astrology correctly. Like if you don't read what a day in the ephemeris is like, or if you don't understand exactly what they want. All right, and after they have selected the day, then they come back again, and you ask for 2 things: time exclusions and prioritize. Time exclusions are the hours in which they would not get married. That's usually from 7 p.m. until 10 a.m. That's not always the case. I remember one time I did a marriage at 9 o'clock at night. excellent buildings. And so the wedding was at 9 o'clock at night or somewhere around there. And the bride danced down the aisle. She was the dancer. And it was really quite something. And they got the marriage that they want. And it lasted 10 years. And then the groom lost the employment. And he suffered. Artist and had all the unconventionality of the artist. So, in this stage three, they're given the opportunities list. Opportunities list number one. And it's obvious that the opportunities lists are based on the houses. Usually you find number five, the fifth house, is the most important thing to people because they're getting married because they want to have children. And the opportunities, are scrambled for the same reason. In this case, it's every fifth house beginning with the sixth house. So the couple, when it's explained to them what kind of opportunities are available for them, not all of them will be there, but at clusters or groups of them, then they go home and decide. And they fill out which are most important opportunities and which are not so important opportunities. And that's the end of stage three. In stage four, what you do is you sit down with date and the time exclusions and the prioritized list of opportunities, and then you find the time when the whole houses correspond to the high priority opportunities. And again, it's almost impossible to find time that is exactly what you want. This is, as always, a matter of compromise. Usually, exclusions are so great, the nighttime hours are excluded, this can be a frustrating task. But because there is reflection through opposite houses, that helps a little bit, so it isn't so difficult. What I go about it usually is I cast the horoscope for every hour of the day. We can do it now with the computers. You can just sit there and you can, have the houses change every day. You just keep adding 5 minutes to the whole business, and then you go through the whole day, and then you write down the ones that are most like what you want. So you study them, and it sometimes requires casting horoscopes for every 15 minutes or for every 5 minutes or something like that. But eventually you find you have to use not only direct positions of planets, but you have to use rulerships. If the planet is good and strong, it'll function through rulerships. And so that's another thing that makes it not absolutely impossible. And then you come up with several kinds. And you bring a couple in again. And you say, well, there's this time, and this time that are like like in this way, and they're not like it in this way. And then you tell them what is what, and they go home again and they decide what of the three times they want. Now, in this, you give a range of time. Sometimes the range of time is as little as 5 minutes. That I now pronounce you husband and wife has to be within a 5 minute. Wedding rehearsal and things like that, you have to know how long it's going to take to get to that, and it's important that they know the range. Sometimes you can have a range of as much as 20 minutes. All right, now this is an example of an artificial election. You can do an artificial election for other things, like we said, like writing a great American novel or something like that, the procedure is all the same, except that if it's one person electing to do one thing, it's much easier. I just lived together with him first. And I read her the Riot Act. I said, you are just a convenience for him. You want to have a child and you want somebody that's engaged in a marriage and really, really thinking marriage. And I said, I would not do this because you have a child with this man. You know, what had happened was, I remember the details of it. The man was a professional gambler, and he was very famous in town for having a touting system. And a lot of prominent people in the city knew him because they would bet on football games, and he and his partner had this. But he was having a lot of bad luck. And he had borrowed money, and the lender, who was not necessarily really a highly ethical person, said, start coming down heavy on him. He said, I want my money back. And he said, I'll get the money. And so he went all the way to Hong Kong. And she went along to Hong Kong. And in Hong Kong, they met a famous Chinese astrologer. And the Chinese astrologer said, your luck will only change when you get married. And what happened is they came back to Madison, and after several days, he said to her, I'm thinking of getting married. I want to give you the first shot at it. And that's literally the way he said it. And she came into my office, and that's when I read her the Riot Act. I said, you can't go for this. This is not right. And she got her dander up, and she told him so, and she told him what was what. 2 days later, Y comes into my office and says, I want to marry Z to change his luck, and it would only be a marriage on paper, and X would still be his lover. But the destiny would be satisfied. And I read her the Riot Act. I says, you don't do that. You can't have a make-believe marriage. And you know, there's no good can come out of this. But Y was a sporting person. And so Y said, I'll marry you. And so what they did is because he had all these connections, they got a really quick marriage, and they got married, and his luck didn't change. And as it happened, there was a famous Chinese astrologer in visiting professor in Berkeley, and they managed to finagle a conference with him. And while they're waiting there, there's, you know, in this waiting room, there's a little bowl of candy in there, and X says, that candy shouldn't be in that plastic bowl because that's poison. The poison comes from the plastic. And they wait and wait, and eventually they have the session with the man. The first thing the man does when he sits down is he points at the bull, and she says he knew. He picked up her thought. And he said to Z, the gods will not be cheated. It has to be a real marriage. And if it is not a real marriage, the destiny is not going to change. You know, you get your knuckles broken or whatever they do with you. And so Z says to X, yes, I really do want to marry you. Let's make it a real marriage. So X comes to me, and together with Z, but him not always being present, we go through this procedure. At the same time, Z goes to back to Hong Kong and visits the astrologer there, and there was an added feature that it had to meet what she wanted through this process and what the Chinese astrologer said. There had to be a coincidence between the two of them. And they did actually find such a day. But he was already married to Y. And so because he had all of these connections, he had connections in the courthouse. And he got a one-day walk-through divorce. And then they went down to Las Vegas. They went down to Las Vegas, X, Y, and Z. And X and Z got married, and Y, who was the best friend of X, was the timekeeper. And it was a matter of, I now pronounce you man and wife. And the marriage worked for a while, and they have a child. But his luck did, in fact, change. But his behavior didn't change, and he turned out to be too roguish to be really a husband, and he turned out to be irresponsible. But the wedding was the wedding reception was really interesting because it was broken into three parts. At the bar were all the gamblers, some of whom I knew. And in the one corner where it was the Chinese community, and this was in a Chinese restaurant, I don't know if it even exists anymore, and then in another corner were all of the spiritual friends. And so there was the Chinese people were eating Chinese food, and the people at the bar were picking up, you know, chicken wings and things like that. And there was vegetarian fare for everything else. And the bride wore traditional red silk, and the groom, who was Chinese, wore a Western business suit. And it was one of the funnier experiences I had in my life, and I really enjoyed every bit of it. And that's all I have for tonight. We get out of here in less than an hour. Are there any questions on this process?
Did anyone
through
this process with them?
I went through it with X, and she communicated with him. She asked him questions and got answers from him. He didn't want to go through the whole business of everybody coming in. But just because you have the day that you want, and maybe it's the best day that you can have, doesn't mean necessarily that the marriage is going to work. It still takes a lot of work on the part of both people for it to work, for it to endure. So it's a you know who it was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Oh,
yeah. A window shopper.
A
window shopper. All right. Thank you very, very much. Next time we'll have the hybrid, which will be another shaggy dog story. It will be long and entailed, but to me, utterly fascinating. I have been treated. Oh, a lot of people have gone through this. You know who the one was with, now that we're off camera now, you know who the one was where there was the entailed...